This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
What's going on? This is Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, and on the phone line, I'm going to get right to it. The one and only Mike McVay is on the show. What's going on, man?
Hey, I am thrilled to be a guest in your show. I've been listening to the Hoppy Hour, and so I'm all in. I feel like I should have a special hat on. Maybe some kind of lay around my neck. I'm ready for it.
Thank you. And I know you really mean that, because a lot of times radio people that come on will say that, and I can't tell if they're being serious, but this is going to the first thing I'm going to say to you, and I'm not trying to kiss your ass. I've sent my work to probably, I can't even count how many people. I've reached out to countless people, and a lot of times they'll claim they'll get back to you, and they don't. And there's some radio executive, most of them, that I know they're busy, but I would prefer them to say that they don't have time. For example, one time I asked Man Cow if he'd want to come on, and he goes, no, I'm good. And I totally respected that. With you, Mike, every time I've ever hit you up, If I was trying to apply for a job or whatnot, and I know you do this to everybody, no one ever overlooks the fact how loyal you are, Mike. You get back to everybody. I truly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, man. Well, I appreciate that. I mean, my quick story about you is, and I don't know how many years ago, was it 6, 7, 8 years ago? I met you at a...
I believe it was 2014.
2014, so you're going to make me do math. So 7 years ago, I was at a morning show boot camp, and there was this real tall young kid who was being very polite, sitting with everybody, asking questions, and I love that, and particularly when I see a young person who wants to be in the audio medium, radio, podcasting, streaming, you name it, somebody who really wants to put in the hours and learn and listen and sit and talk to, the gray hairs like me. I'm happy to spend the time and do it, because that's a lot more than what most people do. Most people just want to roll out of bed and be a star and win American Idol and not put the time and energy in. And I saw you putting the time in, so I appreciate it.
Now, you often hear, and I think it's kind of rubbing into the whole way people view Generation Z, but throughout the 2010s, you would hear radio people or people for any job say that millennials don't have any work ethic. And now it's kind of trickling into Generation Z as they're growing up. What has been your take over, let's say, the last 12 years since millennials and then Gen Z are now growing up? What is your take on their work ethic? Because you always hear mixed reviews about it anywhere you go.
I don't agree with those people who bash the generation. I mean, you know, I grew up in the Vietnam era, and there were slackers in my generation just as well. And matter of fact, a couple years ago, I received a recognition at a conference, and there had been a discussion earlier in the day about millennials and Gen Z, and they were saying negative things like that. And I said, man, I just see myself in those kids. I see my generation, because my parents said the same thing about us. And I've got a lot of evidence to the contrary, not only yourself, but Daniel Ann Standig, who is the CEO of a company called Futuri, started working at McVay Media when he was 18 years old. And today he's still in his early 30s and is CEO of a huge digital company. My daughters are both involved in the business in two different areas of it, and they're engaged. And you know, I just think that it's an easy excuse for people to whine and complain. But if anything, you've got to admire the fact that younger people today have priorities that are bigger than just having a job. It's a more European type of mindset. You know, in America, you're judged by the job you have. And the number of times that, you know, I would have a dinner with someone who'd never met me before and didn't know what I do, and they ask what you do right away, and they're judging you that way. When you visit the United Kingdom or a lot of the European countries and you spend time talking to people, they're asking about your family, your children, what things you do. So, I mean, this is all my opinion. I'm not a social researcher, but I'm just telling you, I've not seen anything that scares me about the younger generation in that regard.
Well, what I've noticed, going back to talking about like what type of job you have in a general conversation, my grandpa and then people, I don't go to church anymore, but all the older people at my church back in the day would say, you don't talk about religion, sex, the election, and money, and just all those like taboo topics. And now it seems like whenever you're in a conversation, people will talk about how much money they have. They'll talk about their sex life. They'll either bash or applaud religion, and then they'll want to talk about Trump or Biden. And it just feels like you are right about, I haven't been to the United Kingdom, but it seems like they're not talking about all those topics and being in your face about it.
They definitely do talk about, you know, the politics. They're more polite in that they're not asking what they make financially. And you know, I've sat, McVeigh Media has an associate consultant in Australia who's a good friend of mine. He's done a lot of work with me off and on over the years, named David Rogerson. And on one of his trips here to America to visit me, he had had lunch with some other friends of ours. And when he came back, he said to me, there were some women sitting at the table next to me and we could overhear their conversation. And he said, we just wouldn't talk about those things in public that they were talking about. And I just wonder if social media isn't part of what's changed, meaning, you know, on social media, you see people talking about all kinds of things and putting it out there. So maybe it's that. Maybe it's reality shows. Maybe it's, you know, the fact that, you know, we have a much more global world today. You've got to remember, when I grew up, there were three TV channels and AM, FM radio. And, you know, telephones weren't portable or mobile. You didn't have an internet. We weren't always accessible. A lot of cities had two newspapers, because that's where you got the information. So I think, you know, that's probably the change, you know, for sure.
Everybody talks about Howard, Wolfman Jack, I guess you could say Jerry Springer, all those like raunchy shows that were like the internet before the internet. What were some other examples back in the day, 80s, 90s, of maybe names that people don't think of that were sort of innovative pre-YouTube and TikTok?
Well, I mean, if you talk about being out there, of course, people know who Bubba the Love Sponge is. And, you know, Bubba was an early adopter of shock radio. But what Howard did, was a step farther than a lot of those other talent did. There were people like John Lanigan, who was a big morning air talent in Denver and then came to Cleveland, where I now live. And John Lanigan, you know, was an innovator. Don Imus, who died, you know, about a year and a half ago. Mr. Imus was, you know, very, unique in his style, and he was considered a shock jock. And again, the things that these people did are nothing compared to what you can hear on the internet today. But in those days it was over the air radio, and so you got in trouble for stuff. Opie and Anthony were quite trendsetters. But if you look at the other side of it, and you say, not just being outrageous, but who were some of the great talent that created great shows? Machine Gun Kelly in Los Angeles was an amazing, I don't mean Machine Gun Kelly, the music artist today, but Machine Gun Kelly in Los Angeles in the 70s and 80s was somebody who could use theater of the mind and create great programming. Elvis Duran, who's a Today personality and still on Z100 in New York and syndicated from Premiere, is an amazing talent. I mean, there's a lot of people that continue to push the ball. What used to frustrate me would be when I see things on TV that people scream are new, and I look at it and go, well, that's a radio bit. You know, like James Corden, Carpool Karaoke, is amazing. I mean, he gets Paul McCartney, Elton John, you know, Adele, you know, amazing artists, but that's a radio show bit that just happened to be translated to television and works really well because of his talent. In the guests, David Letterman was always famous for taking, you know, radio type bits and turning them into, you know, television humor. So there's a lot of people that have been trendsetters over the years.
You know who I think gets too much credit for being trendsetters, going back to TV people taking away the attention of radio, is Impractical Jokers. I mean, every morning radio show ever, granted it was just through audio, but you would always have your intern back. I mean, Mancow did it. Yeah, Eddie and Jobo did it in Chicago. Every market seemed to have it, where the wacky morning zoo would do the like man-to-man thing. And I feel like it's kind of like, it's hard to explain. Like, Impractical Jokers is great, don't get me wrong, but it's not the original. And I feel like a lot of people think they're the first ones.
Oh, totally. Well, and again, it's what you come to know, right? I mean, so many radio shows had the stunt boy or the magic man or, you know, Kellyanne in the Van, KVIL in Dallas, amazing morning talent, Ron Chapman, who was legendary, had a woman named Susie who was in a van. And so you're right, there was that connection to the street and being there, you know, doing either stunts or getting people to decide who was going to win an election by the color of the donut they picked. Yeah. Well, and, you know, for that title, it was probably funny, you know?
Well, going back to John Lanigan, my mom grew up listening to him in Cleveland, and she knew him when he was doing TV shows. And then all my mom's friends, when I worked in Cleveland radio, they all gushed and adored John Lanigan. Now, when I worked in Cleveland, it was after he retired, but they would play his show, The Spew, in the hallway of iHeart Cleveland that he did with Mike Trevisano. And then I got to talk occasionally to Jimmy Malone, who is the co-host with John Lanigan. And I just think that John Lanigan and that team, Lanigan and Malone, I don't think they get enough credit nationally. Because, I mean, everybody in Cleveland, whenever I told somebody that I was working in radio because my mom's family's from Cleveland, dude, 100% of them all mentioned John Lanigan immediately.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I mean, when I first moved to Cleveland and became the manager at WMJI, John Lanigan was doing mornings on WGAR in Cleveland. And he had followed Don Imus, who had been there before him. And you know, I was starting my consultancy way back in 1984. And one of my clients was a station in Tampa, where you are, and I asked John if he would be interested to go to Tampa, and he did. He went to what was called Magic 96 in Tampa and did mornings for a year, and it just didn't work out. And so meanwhile, I'm still, you know, consulting now at WMJI, and I knew John was unhappy, and he had had a one-year non-compete anyway. And so I approached him to see if he would consider coming back to do mornings on Magic. And there were a couple of things I learned out of it. Had a whole experience. First off, when he came back to Cleveland and was on an FM station instead of AM where WGAR was, you know, and we put the right people around him, his show popped immediately. But the second thing I learned was people were giving me credit, thinking I was really brilliant, that I had sent him to Tampa for 1 year while his non-compete expired and brought him back. And that wasn't true. I mean, we sent him to Tampa hoping to be successful, and it just didn't work out. And so we brought him back. And so the lesson I learned there was sometimes just shut up and people think you're smarter than you are.
That happens to me occasionally. Like, I'll say a funny joke on air, but I'm not really trying to be funny. Or things will work out with the shows that I produce on the weekend. And everyone's like, good job, Hoppy. I can't believe you did that. And I go, yeah, totally. It was not a coincidence whatsoever.
Well, and when you mentioned about John Lanigan and not getting credit, you know, WMJI for a long time while he was there was the number one overall radio station playing oldies, you know, playing classic hits. And I would have people call me and say, what's WMJI doing? What's their secret? And I would say, well, let me send you an air check. And I would send audio from Lanigan's morning show because Lanigan played no music. And so I would send him the audio and they'd be like, well, there's no music. And I go, and that's their secret. John Lanigan has doubled the shares of the rest of the radio station. And that was it. I mean, Lanigan was that big.
Now, I hear all these tales before my time of radio guys hearing air checks of other people and then copying them. For example, I mean, it seemed like every city had their own version of Howard, and people can claim that they were the ones that originated it in their town. But if you listen to it, it's a lot of times very similar to Howard. How is that taken within the business back in the day where you would hear somebody and allegedly you can tell that they heard air checks or a tape and sort of copied what they did?
You know, I mean, I unless someone was a complete ripoff and they were recording the other person's show and stealing the jokes, I mean, you know, what that's called is modeling. And modeling is actually a way to learn your skills. It's not great if you go into a market and you're just a ripoff. And you know, that can be a problem. I mean, there were two great air talent, one in Buffalo, one in Pittsburgh, that I was familiar with. Because I grew up in Pittsburgh, I grew up listening to a guy named Jim Quinn, who did nights on the top 40 there, KQV. And in Buffalo was a guy named Jack Armstrong, who was a huge number one guy. Later in my career, I was able to work with Armstrong in L.A. But from Buffalo, Armstrong went to Pittsburgh, and everybody in Pittsburgh thought he was copying Jim Quinn because they both spoke really fast. They both had a lot of the same sentences. When I worked with Armstrong later in L.A., I found out that Quinn had ripped off Armstrong. But the listeners didn't know. So when Armstrong got to Pittsburgh, everybody thought he was the copycat. So, I mean, you know, should you find your own thing? Yeah, of course you should. And by the way, radio today is in a different era. I mean, you know, when I was starting, you know, people used names like the Mighty Mouth or Jack Armstrong, Yellow American Boy, or, you know, Bubba the Love Sponge and so on. You know, today it's a very genuine fiber world. And so you can't be that same hokey person. You've got to be who you are. You know, you've got to be a natural person. So today, if someone is modeling themselves after another talent, they should only be modeling the basics, the syntax, the pace, but they need to be themselves. Because if you're not, it's not like the old days. Social media will find you out, and your audience will find out that you're a fake.
What do you think of the app TikTok? I don't know if I'm officially an older millennial. Like, I know I'm not old age-wise, but I just don't get it. My girlfriend uses it all the time. She loves it. I know it's important for radio people to be on it, but I just don't know what to do with it. I look at it and I just can't relate. I don't know what you think about TikTok and radio and TV and media-wise combined.
Well, I think TikTok is, I mean, I have all these things like TikTok and Clubhouse and all of that on my phone, you know, because I have to, because I need to know what's going on. And I think that TikTok is something that you should be on, but you've got to figure out how to do it for yourself, meaning no one would necessarily expect you to be doing a dance with a song with your girlfriend. But if it's so out of the ordinary, if it's so unique, if it's so unusual, and you point to it, then it may, you know, have a connection with your audience and lead people there to see it and come back to you. And it's kind of like that funny thing that happened. The other side of it is, if there's something you can do that's really good and really natural, it could drive some audience to you. But I think, unlike Clubhouse, TikTok is more observational for people in media. You know, I have people telling me about you know, well, they're all about the music that's used on TikTok and what have you. And yeah, that, you know, you might find a hit song off of TikTok. But I have a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old granddaughter. My two granddaughters are both on TikTok. And when I see them shooting videos, they're often just looking for a song that matches the stunt they want to do. It's not because they think it's their most favorite song. So, you know, should radio people look at TikTok? Yes. If you're the type of show that has something you can do on it that makes sense, like a Tino Cuccino, you know, I think he's really suited for that format, then great. But to me, Clubhouse is probably somewhere I would go if I were on the air, because I would want my listeners to have a chance to converse with me en masse.
So like a month or two ago, I was in the car with my girlfriend and I was looking at TikTok and I was looking at like other radio people that were on it. And I wasn't necessarily jealous of how many more fans they had on there, but I was getting annoyed. And then she told me, she's like, well, use TikTok to look at things that you want to look at, things that interest you, to take your mind off of radio. And I think that might be, and I thought that was one of the best things that I've ever heard. I think that might be what the disconnect is with radio people in their late 20s, 30s, 40s, and beyond, is that when they're going on TikTok, they feel like they're overwhelmed because they want to get TikTok famous. Like, I have a few coworkers that talk about TikTok and then they're annoyed that they're not famous. And I'm like, maybe we can just have a platform where we observe and learn things and we don't always need to try to get our big break from an app. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And by the way, who knows, you know, who knows what is going to take off. The 10-year-old granddaughter did a video. My daughter, the granddaughter's mother, sells essential oils. And so my daughter is, you know, one of those people who's like, whatever ails you, put essential oil on it, or smoke this, or burn this, or smell this, and it'll make you feel better. And her 10-year-old daughter did a TikTok video. You know, you might have been raised by a Karen. I'm being raised by an essential oils mom. And then the next picture, it shows the kid with her, you know, backpack, and she's getting ready to go out the door, and on the screen, the words, the caption is, heading to school, have your essential oil, great. The next one is, it shows a diffuser and says, feeling stressed? Oh, eucalyptus. The next shot, it shows crutches, and it says, broke your leg? Try this oil. You know, well, you know, it's just, it's funny. Here's a 10-year-old making fun of her mother, and she got 50,000 views on this thing. You know, which I know is nothing, but, you know, it's just one of those things. For whatever reason, the humor in that piece took off. Now, separate sidebar, I'm teasing my 10-year-old granddaughter that she's an influencer now.
It's funny, dude. When I was 10 to 18 years old before I graduated, I mean, I didn't have any of this. The most I had was early Facebook and then MySpace. So it's really bizarre. My girlfriend's cousin's daughter, like, the mom owns the company, but they sell like merchandise and candles and that, and they do excellent, dude. Like, they kick ass on there. Yeah. They do great on social media. And I'm like, I look at her, I'm like, she's this kick ass independent female with an awesome mom. She's in seventh grade. And then I look back at what I did in seventh grade. I was like, dude, I was getting all D's and I just didn't care. It's like fascinating how they're sort of growing up at a greater pace, but at the same time, you can see how they're young on social media, if that makes sense.
Oh, totally. Totally. I mean, and they're, you know, they're living it. But you are correct to say that, you know, each generation is accelerating on their maturity, you know, how they're growing up, the knowledge that's coming into them. And you have to wonder what's going to be next and what's going to be next. I mean, smart speakers. Look how new smart speakers are and how that's exploded over the last couple of years. It's always something.
I was listening to a radio show and the co-host talked about how his kid looked at all his tapes that he had in his room from the radio show they produced, and his kid thought it was a Transformer toy. I never felt older at all. The idea, like, it's just like, if you're not born with it and you're born in the 2010s, you're not going to know what a tape is. And I was just mind blown by that. And they also didn't know what a dial tone was. All these things that seem like they were there forever, you forget they don't really exist anymore.
Wow, I didn't even think about the dial tone
thing. Isn't that fascinating?
Like, yeah, yeah. And think about, you know, who has home phones anymore?
Whenever I, like, apply for, I don't know what I would have applied for recently where I would have had to put in my home phone. But, you know, like, when you're applying for a job or whatnot and it says home phone and cell phone, I literally just put in my cell phone and my home phone. I don't even know why they ask for it. I just always give them the same number.
Yeah, I usually leave the home phone empty. Cell phone's the only thing I have. You know, I know we have a phone line. We still have a phone line in our house, but it's because, but there's no phones around to hear it. And I asked my wife, I said, why do we have this phone bill? And it's for the security system. I guess the security system has to have a hardline phone line or something.
Now, have you ever lived in a warm climate? Because I know you live in Cleveland, and I lived there briefly for about 2 seconds. So I was there during the bitter winter of 2015. So how do you deal with the cold weather, and did you ever live in a warm climate?
Yeah, I mean, I've lived all over the place. I've done what a lot of us do in this business. I grew up in Pittsburgh, started on the air there, was a program director, morning man, in Wheeling, West Virginia. Then lived in Charleston, West Virginia, then Louisville, Kentucky, and then Los Angeles. And then I went to Mobile, Alabama for my first general manager job, and which was the longest year of my life. No offense to anyone listening in Mobile. And then I moved back to Cleveland. You know, my wife is from this area, and so, you know, we wanted to come back here to raise kids. And I just ended up staying. I never thought that I would be here. You know, 30 some years, 40 years, I guess now. You know, I thought I would be here a couple years and move somewhere warm again. When you say, how do you deal with it? This past winter, because of the pandemic, is the first winter I've been here the entire winter in years. We've always had kind of another place somewhere. And so when I was working for Chino's Westwood One, we had a condo in Atlanta. And so that's where I spent most of my time. And we just had other places along the way that were somewhere warm I could escape. But it was a nice winter. It wasn't bad. And when you don't have to go out in it, it seems a lot better.
What was the first day like for you during the quarantine? For me, I remember I was living in a small little, like, small house. It was like just one room in this bad neighborhood. And I had been there for 5 years. And I just moved out 2 months ago, and I just remember thinking, oh my God, I can't really leave here. What was the experience like for you? Like, cause it was around this time last year when you realized that we weren't going to be leaving our house.
Yeah, it was March 13. And I mean, the point you make is good. And my condo in Atlanta, you know, is a small 2-bedroom condo. And the house here in Ohio is a larger house and has multiple bedrooms. And I flew from Atlanta to Cleveland on March 13, thinking I was going to be here for the weekend. And on Monday, March 16, fly to Chicago and visit the radio station there for Cumulus, WKQX and LSFM and AM. And on that Sunday, the 15th of March, Troy Hansen, the ops manager there, called me and said, hey, somebody in the building, now catch this. He goes, somebody in the building has COVID, so let's postpone your visit by a week or two. And of course, I'm still here. I literally didn't leave. I mean, I go outside in the yard and what have you, but I didn't leave until July 17, 2020. By that point, I'd said to my wife, I mean, I would call down to Atlanta to see what was going on. And the building management would say, well, the pool's closed. The gymnasium's closed. You can't come through the lobby. Just, you know, park your car and go straight up to your floor. no more than two people in the elevator at a time. And so I said to my wife, okay, I'm flying down to Atlanta. I'm going to find a moving company. We're getting rid of Atlanta. And so I literally flew there on the 17th of July, spent 10 days, found a mover, had them pack everything up. And then I drove my car that was there back up here. And that's been it. And so for me, it was kind of that experience you said. I never, you know, planned to be here for a year or more.
Yeah.
You know, it was amazing. Now I got to tell you, though, I've had the first shot of the vaccine. I get the second shot coming up in a couple weeks. And the minute that I got the first shot scheduled, the sun came out, the birds started to sing, life felt better.
It is funny how when things like that happen, like good things happen after you have to wait, you begin to like go outside and it's like that scene in any movie where you begin to smell the roses more, if that makes sense. Because I definitely know what you mean about getting the first COVID shot and then you see the sun. But also when you're living in Cleveland, when the sun comes out, it's like a great moment.
It is. People don't believe me that I tell them when I was first gonna move here after having lived in Los Angeles, and even though my wife is from the area, I'd never lived here. And I'm looking at Places Rated Almanac, and it says sunny days 19.
Yeah.
You know, meaning days when there's no clouds in the sky whatsoever. 19.
I am not trying to like brag at all or whatnot, but the most surreal moment of my life was when I moved out of Cleveland and I was driving down. I drove to Florida and I got to Georgia, and I remember I was pumping my gas. I was like, well, it's a little nicer out, it's a little cloudy. And the weird part about this place called America is right when it says welcome to Florida, you see like palm trees, and then the sun is just everywhere. And for me, growing up in Chicago, where it was sunny sometimes, but I was surrounded by trees in my house, the sun being out all the time, 6 years later, man, my brain cannot comprehend it. It's fascinating.
Oh, you know, I'll tell you, I mean, a lot of it is psychological. Mobile, Alabama actually is a charming city. It just was not a great place for me to live at that time. But I used to, if anyone who knows the geography, Mobile, Alabama is maybe 12 to 15 miles from the Florida state line, and you're only about 45 minutes from Pensacola, which is across the line. And, you know, on the weekends, there were times when I would just drive from Mobile over to Pensacola to sit on the beach there.
Yeah.
You know, just because, like you said, seeing that sign, it says, welcome to Florida. Suddenly my world changed and I wasn't in Alabama, you know?
But there's also this really bizarre thing. It's this human behavior in Florida. I don't even know how to explain it. It's like selfish, but it's endearingly selfish because they don't know that they're being selfish. So you kind of just excuse it and ignore it. But then when you go back to the Midwest and you're around a Midwest charm, you realize that people in Florida are selfish. I don't even know how to explain it, but it's like, I don't know if you've noticed that. Like when you're in Florida, you think it's acceptable. But then when you leave Florida and you go to like the Midwest, you're like, wow, Florida's different.
Yeah, I definitely noticed it's different. I don't know if I've noticed that much, but I've never lived there. When you live there, as you know, it's very different than, you know, being there for a couple weeks on vacation at a time.
Well, the thing is, like, the jaywalking, the amount of jaywalkers we have, and then, like, people on the news getting hit by the news, I mean, or getting hit by a car and it makes the news. Like, in Illinois, in my suburb, like, we literally walked to the red light and then it would cross properly. And it's just little things like that. Or, like, you wait for the white little human character on the sign so that you can cross the road. And people in Florida think that the orange hand, when it's counting down 987, they think that's how many seconds they have until they have to cross the road. It's things like that where you're like, you're just like, when you're in, dude, my current girlfriend doesn't think that, but my last two girlfriends literally were like, no, it means you have 7, 6, 5, 4 more seconds to cross. I'm like, and then I'm beginning to wonder if I paid attention at the DMV. It's just Florida, dude, Florida goes by its own rules, man. It's just, it's a trip.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I see the TV and you see spring break and everything. And yeah. You wouldn't know there's a pandemic. That's for sure.
It's weird for me. So I never really went out. Like, I mean, I went to an occasional bar in May, June, July, but I would wear my mask. And I'm saying that, like, seriously, like, I never went to a packed bar. I would go to a dive bar, sit in a corner and leave just to get out of the house. I did everything right. And I ended up getting COVID from a coworker. I have an idea of who it is. And they have side jobs where they're out and about. And it was like, it was just weird because it was like, all these idiots are like not wearing masks, going to Ybor City, getting blackout drunk. And here I am doing all the right things. And then I got COVID. It was a very fascinating thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's happened to so many people. I was talking to a young singer that I'm working on a project with. She's in Nashville, but she's from Canada. And so she's from Thunder Bay, Canada. And she was talking about, you know, living in Nashville. And she said, and I said, man, I drove through Nashville not long ago because one of my kids lives there. And I said, I was shocked at the number of people walking around with their masks down around their chin or around their neck. And she was like, yeah, I know. She said, but can I tell you, I've been here for a year. I went back at Christmas time to visit my family in Thunder Bay, Ontario, and got COVID. And so you just don't know. I mean, you just don't know where it's going to hit you. What it's going to be. But knock on wood, I've been lucky. I haven't had it. Nobody that's a direct member of my family has had it. So we're lucky.
Now, does that client express if her family or herself have any specific opinions about America? Because I interviewed Humble Howard, who's from the Humble and Fred Show, which I somehow found 10 years ago, and they're out of they're like the Opie and Anthony of Ontario, Toronto. And I had Howard on probably a month ago, and it was a 38-minute interview, and about 28 minutes of it was just him giving his opinion on America. And I never felt more humble. Like, I did not know that Canadians looked down on America, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Howard Glassman, I worked with when he was, I consulted CJEZ in Toronto, and he was there, and he's a stand-up comic and television personality, as well as being a big-time morning talent. And he's really pretty amazing. But his opinion's not unique. I think a lot of, you know, Canadians look at America, and there's two parts to it, right? One part of it is there's a certain jealousy that creates, a jealousy that creates kind of a vindictiveness feeling. And so there's a little bit of that. But then there's also a lot of, you know, they're more like the United Kingdom because they're part of the Commonwealth and how they were raised. And so they're are generally more polite. They're generally, very proud of those things they have. I really like Canada. I think, you know, Canada's a pretty amazing state. I mean, they've, you know, got some pretty dynamic, things in their nation. Like their health program, and despite, you know, people who go, well, that's socialist, it's not. They're making sure everybody has health insurance. There's a lot of positive things, you know, that they have like that. But, I don't know how badly Howard dressed you down. Any Canadian I've been around has actually been pretty polite and not hateful or hurtful.
He wasn't hateful. He was just very opinionated. I feel like it was his chance to speak to Americans about what he thought. It was nothing bad, but I definitely left the phone call going, wow, that might be how a lot of them feel about us.
I think a lot of people in a lot of countries feel that way. You heard before the ugly American. My wife and I have traveled pretty extensively around the world, and you always hear, well, the French are rude. You know, we never had a bad experience in France, and we've probably been to Paris 4 times and other parts of their country a couple times and have never felt that the French were rude. And when we've talked to people, you know, one of the things about being a consultant is I've been able to consult in radio in other countries. And, you know, when I spend time and talk to them, there is just this feeling that they view all Americans as being loud, boisterous, overbearing, rude, very self-centered. And to a certain extent, they're right. I mean, when you're in a foreign country and you listen to their international news, you hear stories about nations I've never heard of before. And so I don't know if it's that America's so big that that's why, you know, so much of our news is just our news, you know, or what it is. But, you know, it's having said all that, I'm really proud of America, though. And there's no country I'd rather live in. The more I travel around the world, even with all the problems, and we have a lot of them, you know, I'd rather live here than anywhere else. I mean, what, you know, the problems people yell about in regard to social injustice, those are very real problems, but we're working on them. We're having protests. We're making changes. We're trying to make it better so that Ryan Hoppe's kids grow up in a much better world. And there's a lot of other countries that aren't even trying.
That's a good point. I didn't really think about that because sometimes I feel like the fake outrage can be a little nauseating, but I think overall I would almost rather have all the outrage, and then over time we'll figure out what we need to be mad about, if that makes sense. Like, I'd rather have a lot of outrage than none, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was listening to one of your podcasts last week, and you went on a rant about the Dr. Seuss books and the people that are yelling about them. And I thought you made a great point where you were like, when's the last time you read a Dr. Seuss book? What are you pissed off about?
Yeah. And then
you want to see Dr. Seuss? Go to the library. And you're right.
Well, it's not just that. It was the, like, and I hate saying fake news, but it was like fake news where, like, I'm seeing all the, cause I, okay, I add every single listener, which is a blessing and a curse, on social media, only on Facebook, because I don't want to follow them all back on Twitter. But on Facebook, I'll add everybody. And I'll see people on the right side, people on the left side. And it was like, and I'm not trying to get political, but everybody on the right was like talking about cancel culture, the liberals. And then they're using like graphics of like the Cat in the Hat and Horton Hears a Who. And I'm like, but that's, those aren't the books that are being canceled. That's what was making me mad, was when I first heard about it, I was like, what's wrong with the Cat in the Hat? And then when you see the imagery and the things that were actually in the books that nobody's ever read, I was like, I got to say something. I'm like, this is out of hand.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I mean, it's interesting because when I heard it, I thought you were right on. And I was interviewed on a different podcast maybe a day or two after I'd listened to that episode of yours. And the person asked me about cancel culture. And I said to them, well, give me a specific. And he said, you know, Pepe Le Pew, the skunk is being canceled because he's overbearing and pushing himself on the kitty cat, who's the female. And I said, well, stop and think about that for a second. I have a grandson who is 9 months old. And if he never sees that, how does that hurt his life? And so if there's something out there that has a stereotype that we don't want to teach our young people, I'm good with getting rid of it. Because frankly, like you say, what, I don't care if they get rid of, you know, Pepe Le Pew or you know, anything else that they're screaming about canceling, because it doesn't change my life. And it may be for the better of my grandson's life. And so you got to look at it that way and say, we are, and my kids would tell you, Poppy, if we were sitting around and my two daughters were here and somebody was doing something stupid somewhere, I would say, I blame their parents. Now, part of that's satire on my part, but the other part of it is real, that we are creatures of our upbringing. We're creatures of our environment. And so I'm not trying to make our world vanilla. That's not it at all. But, you know, we don't need to make fun of people. We just don't. We don't need to put people down. We don't. That doesn't help anybody. So I'm good with canceling all that. I don't think we should make a big deal about it.
I agree. I just think those examples do need to be canceled. I can't think of one that shouldn't have been canceled, but my thing is I just don't want it to be where it feels like every day something needs to be canceled. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be like,
oh, yeah,
we went a week or two without it. Like, for example, back 7 years ago, Paula Deen, the guy that owned the Clippers, yes, it should be canceled. Yes, the Looney Tunes cartoon and those Dr. Seuss books should be canceled. But I feel like it's becoming a hobby where people just want to cancel. And it's like, why don't you go outside and look at the sun? Like, you don't always need to cancel everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you gotta weigh it. You know, Jeep is dropping the Cherokee brand from the name, and I guess, you know, at first I was saying, well, that's silly. How's it dishonor the Cherokee Nation? But then somebody said to me, well, the Cherokee Nation was upset by it. Okay, fine. So, you know, you gotta weigh those things, right? So if Jeep decides they're gonna call the Jeep something else, you know, I don't buy it for the name, so that doesn't bother me. But to your point, I get that there are some things that people are yelling about that's silly. Again, I would just look at it and say, you know, if the people that are affected or classified or identified with that name that's being belittled are uncomfortable with it, then it should be addressed. To your point, some of the people that are yelling, you know, I can pretty much guarantee you there's nobody that's a green character with a tall hat that is yelling to get rid of the Dr. Seuss books.
Yeah.
So some people that are yelling are just yelling for the sake of being over the top.
Now, before I let you go, I know you write a lot of articles and you go to conventions and you talk to podcasts and people all the time. What is the one thing you notice yourself saying over and over again about American radio? What needs to happen or what isn't happening? But what's like the overall theme that's on your mind about radio right now?
Well, and the key word there is right now. I mean, my theme has changed over the years, but right now my message would be every time you turn around, you pick up an article where someone from Pandora or Spotify or SiriusXM or, you know, Google, you know, just pick one, Apple Music, are taking their shots and being up on radio. And the reality of it is they all wish they had radio's distribution. They all wish they were as omnipresent as is radio. The problem that radio has is a content problem. We have degraded the listening experience over the last dozen years. We play too many commercials. In that spot load is too many units. We've stopped really trying to play music that satisfies the person who wants to discover new songs. We have put too many rules on air talent. And so many air talent are now either automated or voice tracked that we've lost some of the connectivity we had to the communities before. Some stations who are not total line reporting, and by total line reporting, I mean are not simulcasting, they're over the air on the digital stream. Those who break away for commercials, some of them have upcuts. You hear half of a commercial. You hear words missing. You hear the same, you know, Smokey the Bear or McGruff the Crime Dog PSA over and over, you know, on their stream.
So true.
And we wonder why fewer people are listening. It's, you know, blame the listening experience. And my frustration is there are people who could change it, but they're not changing it. And therein is the problem. That's my frustration. That's what I've been talking about for a couple of years now, where, you know, it's just like, why can't we try to run 6 minutes of commercials an hour and two stop sets of 3 minutes each, and we only play 60s? So you've got three units in one and three in the other, and charge more for them. Why can't we, you know, do some music research? Why can't we have spotlights on new music? Things like that, I think, would improve the listening experience and would stop the erosion that we're seeing. And so when someone, you know, I saw a study the other day where someone said, radio still has 85% of all Americans listening every day. Well, I can remember when that was 98%. And so it's going to keep eroding unless somebody wakes up and says, we've got the distribution, we can fix this, let's improve the listening experience.
My thing, and now this is just from, I'm 27, so I haven't been in radio my whole life, if that makes sense. But what I notice is it seems like 70s, 80s, 90s, even 20 years ago, it felt like PDs and programmers took more of a chance and then it became successful. But it feels like everybody's afraid to take a chance. And I think that's why everything is just kind of the way it is because like everybody, I don't know if it would be ratings or money or revenue, but I just don't think anybody rolls the dice anymore. It's just, if it works, why would you even want to touch it? It's just kind of a sad mindset, you know?
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I agree 100% on that.
So where can people find everything you're up to?
Go to McVayMedia.com, McVayMedia, McVayMedia, McVay, McVayMedia.com. That's my website. You can email me, MikeMcVay@McVayMedia.com. And I'm on all the social media. Mike McVay is the handle I use everywhere.
Well, Mike, it's been a lot of fun having you on the show. I appreciate our friendship and just keep being you, man. It does not go overlooked how real you are. Because a lot of times when you reach out to people, you can just kind of feel that it's not going to be a real experience. But you are as real as it gets, Mike McVay.
Now, thank you, Ryan. I appreciate it. It was great being part of the Hoppy Hour.
Awesome. Thank you, Mike.
See you later. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.